Here we go. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Your favorite topical ointment soothing the burns caused by media malpractice. Yes, the directions on the bottle say apply liberally, but don't be fooled. 100% conservative in the jar. All right. You know, did you see this? The libs are shocked. In fact, shock isn't even the right word. They are sick to their stomachs. Cannot believe that In-N-Out, the popular Southern California fast food chain, donates money or has donated money to the California Republican Party. And but by the way, they're so disgusted by this that they are calling for a boycott. This is brand. This is news today. By the way, I know we're a day early. It's Thursday night. I know. Don't be shocked. We are. I'm traveling tomorrow. So I, you know, duty first. I've got to do the show. And so thank you for letting me jump the gun here and end the week a day early. So I want to ask you this. Who has been to In-N-Out? Who? Okay. Now, you notice that on the wrappers, if you order a burger, you look at the little wrapper. If it comes in a bag, a to-go bag, on the packaging, everywhere, pretty much everywhere on the packaging, there are Bible verses. I noticed those at the get-go, right? So I would assume, I don't know where, why is this suddenly now, today, a thing? You know, the left, by the way, this is illustrative of a thing that we understand and know about Democrats, liberals and the like, is that you've got to find outrage. It is. I know, because they're so dismayed that In-N-Out is donating to liberal causes. And now it's their favorite place to get hamburgers. Now it creates a tremendous quandary for these millennials who enjoy hanging out at the local In-N-Out and ordering their secret menu items, found out now that on the secret menu, in fact, was a heavy dose of pro-Trump agenda. Now, by the way, but it's a big stretch to rip, you know, if you're giving money to the California Republican Party, it's a far stretch to call that a pro-Trump agenda. But regardless, that's what they're saying. I'm actually, not only am I surprised that they thought that perhaps In-N-Out would be a liberal company, even though they're putting Bible verses on their wrappers, I'm surprised that anyone with half a brain in the state would think that a successful, privately held family business that does business in the state of California would in any way, shape, or form want anything to do with the Democratic Party here. Really, truly, honestly, tell me what successful businessman you know that thinks liberalism, socialism, you know, Bernie-crats, that's a good idea for us moving forward. And then, by the way, the other thing that's so fascinating about this is In-N-Out is a company. They're so good to their employees. It's one of the few places, and you realize this isn't fast food, it's one of the few companies where they hire people, they pay them well, they pay them above minimum wage, and then they promote from within. So this is a company culture where people are promoted up internally, and you actually can start as a burger flipper and end up in management making six figures. And by the way, that's exactly, I would think, is the liberals' wet dream right there. I mean, some guy starting out blue collar doesn't even require a college degree and can actually end up making, quote unquote, a livable wage. They don't even know, by these people, they don't even know what word to fight anymore. So anyway, now In-N-Out is on the outs with Democrats, and they're freaking out. Do you think this is going to go anywhere? I don't. And I'll tell you why. Because it's a damn good burger. And you cannot keep a millennial from his burger. I'm telling you, it's a non-starter. What's the backup to this? He's going to suddenly go to Wendy's? No, In-N-Out is not a new sponsor on the program. They probably are not too enthused about this attention. But That's what I think. It's just like Chick-fil-A. Everybody knows Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is a conservative group. They're based in the South. They're very religious. They close on Sundays. And then shock. Everybody was shocked when they supported Prop 8. Remember that? And people started boycotting Chick-fil-A. But that didn't. Look, I mean, last I checked, they're doing just fine. So, yes, this is going to go nowhere. It's typical hyped outrage. Everybody's having a cow over it. And I expect the story to die. So fear not. In-N-Out is still going to survive this. Right now, as we speak, I think that the Democrats are really starting to worry. I think they're really starting to worry. And stories like these kind of hysteric, build your new controversy of the day stories remind me that they are really, really worried that this Trump collusion investigation with Mueller is going to come apart at the seams. The single ray of hope that these guys had, the single ray of hope was this story that came out a few weeks back, led by CNN, where CNN had an anonymous source that said that Trump knew about the Russian meeting at Trump Tower beforehand. Now, honestly, the fact that we're even talking about this as an important data point is silly, because I would argue that even if he knew about it beforehand, even if he sat in the frickin' room, it's not collusion. When you get to the heart of what happened in that meeting, you had this guy that was a music promoter, and he wanted to be important with the Trump family, and so they bring in some Russian gal who really just wants to lobby candidate Trump, right, for some help with the Magnitsky Act. This is some obscure stuff, but it has to do with Russian oligarchs being able to do business in the States. And as soon as the Trump people realize that they're being given a pitch, they're just like, come on, get out of here. We don't have time for get out of here. And it ends. There's nothing to it. But some people are very concerned with what did Trump know, when did he know it, and was he aware of the meeting beforehand? It is, in this context, they are grasping for straws so vigorously that Trump knowing about this meeting beforehand or participating in it would be a giant smoking gun. So when this story ran, the Washington Post, they got in on it, bunch of other newspapers, everybody printed this, and now you could hear the debt. Oh, yes, we got him. We got him. We got the Trumpster. See, he was lying all along. And more importantly, they said Don Jr. lied because he's the one who had testified to Congress that his dad didn't know about it beforehand. So at any rate, the source ended up outing himself. The source was none other than Lanny Davis, who's Michael Cohen's lawyer. Michael Cohen being Trump's former lawyer, who last week copped a plea and is now supposedly cooperating with Mueller. So Lanny Davis is the source, but how do we know? How does he come? Well, he comes out by saying, you know what? My bad. I lied. And now, actually, the greatest fallout of the story is, well, all the semi-responsible journalists out there immediately printed retractions. And CNN refused to do so. And I'll tell you, I know it's bad. I know it's bad because you've got even the leftists right now calling CNN out on their absolute, absolute terrible journalism. Glenn Greenwald is? He's with The Intercept, he used to be with The Guardian. He's the guy who... He shepherded and handled the Snowden story, wrote it, obviously, but also is the one who Snowden turned everything over to. So Greenwald's a lawyer. He lives down in South America. He's a lefty guy. And he is on one. And when the narrative is in trouble, when people on your own side, on your own side of the political spectrum, are beginning to lob some shots at you. Listen to what he said. It was actually on Fox News, Tucker Carlson, talking about the Lanny Davis thing. This was on Tuesday. Listen closely.
What's so crucial about this is that after Lanny Davis went on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and to Anderson Cooper's shock, admitted that everything CNN had been breathlessly hyping is true, was actually false, namely that Michael Cohen was there when Trump learned about the Trump Tower meeting in advance. The Washington Post and the New York Post listened to that and they said, wait a minute, we independently confirmed CNN stories based on an anonymous source, and our anonymous source was Lanny Davis, who's now saying the whole thing is false. So they did what they had to do, and they retracted the story, they outed their own source. They said our anonymous source is Lanny Davis, and we now retract it because he says it's false. CNN couldn't do that because they lied to the entire world.
This is the background. If you've been hearing during the week that the president is taking pot shots at CNN and he's calling, you know, Jeff Zucker Little Jeff and things like that, and you're wondering, what is this about? You literally have CNN. Well, one, they had a guy come along who lied. Now, this, let's give them the benefit of the doubt for a second. Let's say that they didn't orchestrate it. They didn't play any part in the lie. They didn't stretch the truth or anything as they knew it at the time of publishing the story. Fine. The minute they learned that from Lanny Davis himself on CNN live, right, now it's time to retract all those stories. And by not doing it, this is where Trump actually has a case. This is where you start to realize that him calling CNN fake news and saying they're 100% against him and unwilling to be fair in any respect, it has credence. Now, you're probably also wondering now, why did Lanny Davis, why would you lie? Why would you drop that story? And I did some digging on this because I knew you would want to know this. And the truth is, and this, you got to hand it to him. So Michael Cohen is a client. Michael Cohen, while he used to be paid big money by the Trump Organization when he was burying the bimbos, so to speak, and working with the Inquirer and getting these stories shut down, at that point, he's living a high life. Now, the money is gone. Right now, he's facing huge fines. He's going to have to pay a bunch of money back to the IRS. Cohen is broke as a joke. I'll be clear about that. Lanny Davis, who used to work for the Clintons, right? He's a big-time liberal operative. Don't forget that. Lanny Davis, at the end of the day, he's still a lawyer. I'm going to tell you something about us lawyers. We like to make money. Okay? Sometimes we do things for the goodness of good, but truthfully, lawyers, you make money by doing what you're doing, right? Representing people. And Lanny Davis needs to make some money representing Cohen. Cohen can't pay him. So, in time, I went back and I said, hey, wasn't there a GoFundMe account? And there was. And they raised $150,000. And do you know why they were able to raise that money? It corresponded exactly with this anonymous source being dropped to CNN. So here is what happened. No, it's really this simple. Lanny Davis drops a fake story to CNN, drops an outright lie, knowing it's going to inflame the left, embolden the president's opponents into believing, aha, there is some truth to this Trump-Russia collusion. Mueller is getting close. Poor Michael Cohen. They pulled out the tiniest, teeniest little violin they could find. They began playing it. And people just, you know, people on this GoFundMe, they just started sending money because that's what all these social justice Trump haters did. They all sent in their EBT cards. Jeez Louise. It's so transparent. And then they got the money. Fine. Okay. All right. We got some money in the account. Oops. Yeah. You know what? I blew it. I actually got it wrong. But the hype it created literally drove these contributions. And, you know, you go into the account, and you see exactly what they were doing. So this is how pedestrian these people are being. There's no better word for it. They're amateurs. They're total amateurs. And the only reason that they're doing things this way is because they think they can get away with being sloppy. They think they can get away by being too clever by half. because they know they've got a complicit media who's going to cover up for them. And slowly but surely, legitimate journalists with whom I disagree, let's say ideologically, but people who actually care about some semblance of journalistic integrity, like Greenwald, are saying, enough, this is insane. And incidentally, too, Greenwald's got a thing to play here, too, because remember, he's got The Intercept, and he started his own media outlet, and these are the media outlets that crush the billion-dollar dinosaurs, and they crush them because the billion-dollar dinosaurs let them. And they let them by becoming caricatures of media instead of legitimate, real media sources. So apply that balm liberally, because this has been a searing week. All right, more on this when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Bombshell coming tomorrow. What? Oh, yeah. Chuck Todd on MSNBC just dropped this gem today. He says, I wouldn't miss work tomorrow because there could be a bombshell from Bob Mueller, and goes on to opine that everybody he has spoken to, all the people in the know, right? And this is how they talk, right? These beltway types, they spend all this time rubbing elbows, shoulders, and other body parts with people inside the halls of power. And so they know everything that's going on. They say, look, don't miss work because everybody that has told me anything that they know about what Bob Mueller is like, his tenacity is going to deliver some result. He would have given up on this long ago if there was no collusion. Okay, so why are we showing up to work tomorrow? Oh, yeah, well, I'll tell you, because these prosecutions are supposed to avoid being political. Yeah, please, I know. But because technically, I know election season has been burning, brightly for a while here, leading up to midterms, but technically we're headed into that period before, from Labor Day to Election Day, it's sort of a no-go zone for prosecutors to go and, prosecute things politically that could impact an election. Okay? So tomorrow, of course, is the last day before Labor Day, right? So tomorrow would be the day, Friday would be the day for, the hammer to drop. Mueller could drop something huge. Man, do we have that clip? They're so excited for this. You can hear them. You can hear them going, oh, yes. Yeah, I wouldn't miss work tomorrow. Something big could come, really huge, because, then we have to go quiet before the election. Tomorrow, this is how they look at it. Tomorrow is the last opportunity for Mueller to expose Trump for the Putin-loving scum that he is, the foreign agent, unregistered, masquerading as president of the United States. Tomorrow, Friday, the last day for Mueller to do this and have a meaningful impact on the election in order that the Democrats be swept into power and can quickly and efficiently dispatch this terrible, terrible blight, right? Speaking about Trump. This is what they're thinking. Okay, I'm just giving you the thought bubble. Well, here, what's the reality? Well, the reality is this. Are you telling me all this investigating, all this squeezing? They prosecuted Manafort for some tax stuff. They threw the book at Michael Cohen, trying to get, him to talk. They're getting his cooperation. The one thing that we thought that Lanny Davis had, or that Cohen had, was that, aha, Trump was really at that meeting beforehand. He was there. That turned out to be a joke. Well, what? I mean, you really think that Trump, who can't even hide, you know, an affair with a dumb Playboy model, has somehow managed to successfully hide a massive, entangled foreign ops mission where he has basically become an agent of Moscow? You can't, on one hand, believe that Trump is a total buffoon, and then on the other hand, think, boy, he really hidden this alliance, this secret alliance with Putin. He couldn't even hide his freaking affairs. This is all. The thing is, enough daylight is on this right now. And every day that goes by, and Mueller realizes this. Trust me, Mueller and all the Democrats and even all these media people recognize that they're running out the clock on this. Now, Chuck Todd, by the way, don't worry. He is not biased. He's not biased, folks. He actually thinks that the media has mistakenly accepted that they are biased and has, you know, made some errors as a consequence. Here was Chuck Todd on MSNBC on Thursday talking about this.
One of the mistakes we in the mainstream media made during when these false accusations against us being biased for 40 years happened is we started believing, oh, maybe we are biased. And we got to, oh, wait, we can't look biased. So then we created a lot of false equivalency issues.
Yes.
What? False equivalency issues? I don't even know what that means. I think what they say is we used to have a conscience. We used to be like, oh, I know we're biased. My bad. It's just who we are. And you know what? We didn't like feeling crappy about ourselves. So now we lie to ourselves and we lie to you some more and everything's good. Like us now? No, actually, we don't. That's why we listen to Sam Nation. All right, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation. We got Friday legal segment coming up here in the next segment, and I'll be back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation. Okay. What is every parent's biggest nightmare? It is, for most of us, getting our kids eventually into a college somewhere and not having to mortgage the house in order to pay for it. Now, the Trump administration has just weighed in on a lawsuit that was filed back in 2014. They are siding with students that are suing Harvard over race discrimination. Now, I think you remember a few weeks ago, much hay was made about the way that Harvard University gives points to certain applicants on things like personality and likability. Now, is that racist? That's a serious question, because in this lawsuit, they claim it is. Because, wait for it, yes, personality and likability as qualities that ascribe or add points to or take away points from an applicant's assessment, right? This is apparently disfavoring Asian applicants. Now, I am going to take the high road here and refrain from any commentary. I did spend 2 years at UCI, and just trust me, I have some. But I think, and I'm going to tell you this, you have to pick a criteria. And the criteria has to be non-discriminatory on its face, right? It can't, and then also there has to be, the result can't be discriminatory either. So let me tell you where Harvard's running into a problem. I think they are coming up with bogus factors to try to create a mixed class. Harvard and many of these liberal institutions believe that their idea of an ideal class is one that has different colors in it. They place and they value that above necessarily finding the best class of most qualified people based on scores and GPA. It is interesting. And it does. And the question is this going to be a lawsuit that has any merit? And the answer is it must. It has to, because we can't be a country. There was an affirmative action case, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, you know, really, based on some factors, you can do it. It's terrible law, though. And I wonder if a Supreme Court with Justice Kavanaugh, for example, would reevaluate this. It is an interesting thought. So I think what the Trump administration is doing is they're trying to find the right fight to take up into the Supreme Court. And this may just be one of those cases where they're going to shepherd it all the way to the top, hopefully, to get the right decision passed for ending affirmative action, which we ought to do. We ought to just, yeah, schools should pick people based on criteria that's non-discriminatory. And that's it. Because we're a meritocracy. And in order to get to that next level, in order to be that place that has, we'll say, an ideal colorblind society, we're looking only at merit and not at things like quote-unquote personality and quote-unquote likability, right? So anyway, the Harvard, of course, is fuming. They think that this is very, very unfair. They want to continue to create their blended, beautiful, United Colors of Benetton utopia. So anyway, this is what they're going to keep doing this, and they're fighting this tooth and nail. I'll keep you posted on these developments. Very interesting case and very applicable, by the way. If you've got a kid coming up through school, they're very talented, and they're doing well, and their GPA is high, and they're going to test well. You want them judged on that. You do not want to give schools the ability to just nix them because they have too many Asians applying. It's nonsense. It's not American. It's not right. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I know the investigation into Trump is continuing. Now, there's some talk. I don't know if you caught this, but Trump has absolutely said that he will not be firing Jeff Sessions before the election. You caught this? He makes no guarantees, of course, what will happen to Sessions after the midterms, but says until the elections in November, he's staying put with his attorney general. Now, yeah, it's classic Trump. Because now that became about, you know, for about 3 hours, that became an intense talking point today. And all the opinion makers began chatting about it. And I strongly believe, and nothing has changed, that if Trump had his druthers, he would get Sessions out immediately. It's tricky because Sessions is an appointee that has to be confirmed by the Senate as a attorney general. And what Trump really needs is he needs to know he's got the votes in the Senate to put in a replacement. So he has to win over Republican senators and get them on board with the idea, right? That's the critical component here. Now, I think, too, I think that to some extent they're going to try. He wants to figure out what's happening in these midterms, too. And Republicans, by the way, are going to gain seats in the Senate. And theoretically, the people that are coming into the Senate, the new Republicans are more likely to be Trumpists. It works out that way. But this investigation, this was bad news from the beginning. And you've got even at this point, Lindsey Graham has had enough of it. Lindsey Graham, who in the beginning, ardent supporter of Mueller, saying we have to put daylight on this, said the following on Fox and Friends on Tuesday.
Seen no evidence of collusion after 2 years. Mueller's looking at it. We'll see what he says. Plenty of corruption in the Department of Justice and the FBI. Should be stunning. Not one Democrat seems to care. Reverse the roles.
What corruption? What do you mean?
Well, okay, just imagine if the Republican Party hired a foreign agent to go to Russia to get dirt on Hillary Clinton, and they used it to get a warrant and never told the court about it. It'd be front page story everywhere. That's pretty corrupt when the two FBI agent and the U.S. attorney, DOJ lawyer, it's our job to stop Trump. Can you imagine what would happen if it's our job to stop Clinton?
I just want to, my role here in this is to track an arc, to not just look at what's going on today, but also tend to take you back and give you context. And what this, to me, this, and statements like this that Graham is making are in such sharp contrast to where he was a year ago. Graham and most of his cohorts in the Senate were very anti-Trump. Moreover, I think they were in many respects openly willing to throw the president overboard. I mean, they wanted to get rid of him almost as much as some Democrats. And herein lies the real gem. The gem is that the Democrats have overplayed their hand. They are holding an absolute, they've got nothing. They've got a weak hand, and they've overplayed it and continue to do so by pushing this thing. So yes, when we're talking about firing Sessions, probably one of the worst things that Trump could do right now before the election is to move Sessions out, put a new guy in, clean this mess up once and for all. Because the reason being is they say, aha, we were this close to finding something. We were this close. But, you know, I think what needs to happen is and Trump's got to build some alliances here. The call for Sessions removal, or the call for Sessions to get this thing under control, is eventually going to start coming from outside voices. And it's going to come first from these never Trump Republicans. And then it's going to begin coming from even people on the left. I mean, The New Yorker, for Pete's sake, they ran a piece, and again, they were interviewing Greenwald, and they went through it, but the summation of the piece is, look, there's greater evil out there than Trump, and these issues have always existed. We've always had abuses of power. We've always had an executive branch that's been overreaching, but where were you in the Obama years? Where were you in the Bush years? Where were you when Clinton was president? Nowhere. All of a sudden, big issue. Because you don't like the guy. And that's not how this works. And I think I just think that there's a sense of equity and a sense of fairness that's being violated here. And it's no longer just Trump and his supporters, but it's the outsiders as well. They're starting to have enough of all this. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. Well, another Trump-backed Republican won a primary. This time it was Ron DeSantis running now as the Republican nominee for governor of the state of Florida. Now, DeSantis immediately proceeded to step in it because he used a pejorative term for screwing it up, referencing his now opponent on the Democratic side, the guy who won that race, Andrew Gillum. Now, Gillum is a black mayor, I believe. Is he a St. Petersburg mayor? And he's a Fort Lauderdale, I think. Have a look, Robbie. Anyway, so but at any rate, so these two are now going to face each other And it is it's a battle royale because Ron DeSantis is supported by Trump. And Gillum, he was backed by Bernie. He's a Bernie bro. Tallahassee. There we go. Mayor of Tallahassee. Now, Tallahassee, this is why I need to get to it. Tallahassee, not all Florida is the same. It's, you know, there's some diversity. Some cities are better run than others. And Tallahassee is not a very well-run city. This guy is running as a Bernie Democrat. He wants to raise the state corporate tax rate to, like, raise it by 40%. He wants all crazy things. Jack up welfare, he wants to do away with stand your ground law. It's a very popular law in Florida. Still, I think this was the Zimmerman case. You remember, you basically don't have a duty to retreat if you're armed. You can use deadly force, and you're not required to, you know, to take evasive measures. He wants to do away with that. And DeSantis, you know, DeSantis is a Trump guy. So you know what he's all about. Interesting enough, Gillum, he got 34% of the vote. DeSantis got 56% of the vote in their respective primaries. I think it's fascinating. So there are only 900,000 people or so voted for DeSantis. About 500 or so voted for Gillum. There's 20 million people in Florida. No more than that. That's a lot of people that didn't participate in this primary at all. And what does that mean? I don't know. And Pete, we're all watching Florida. Why are we watching Florida? Because it's kind of an important state, not for the midterms as much as they are for 2020. Florida is a state that when it went for Trump, it sort of was the backward slide for Hillary, right? I mean, Trump wins Florida and you know, it's a lot of electoral votes. Florida turning blue would be a disaster for Trump and probably actually very difficult for him to win re-election. So people are going to be looking at this race. This is why it matters. People are looking at this race as a bellwether because you've got an entire state voting for a person. This has nothing to do with Nancy Pelosi. This doesn't have anything to do with Trump. This is just the state voting on what do we want? Do we want a conservative or do we want a socialist? And a lot of hay has been made about, you know, ever since Irma and all the influx of Puerto Rican citizens that have come into Florida and have relocated, that it's changing some of the voting demographics. But I don't think personally in Florida, even among centrist Democrats, the concept of wealth redistribution, socialism, democratic socialism, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to sell well. I just don't see it working. And that I think, anyway, we're going to follow this race because it certainly is going to be interesting to see, you know, what in fact is happening in Florida. All right, more on the news. I will talk about John McCain when we come back. I need to address this. So anyway, just don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. We lost Senator McCain this weekend. Terrible cancer. This brain tumor, type of brain tumor that he had, GMB, it's very aggressive, and it's basically a guaranteed death. Which can you imagine receiving? Excuse me, this type of diagnosis, and you know you're going to go. And many of us will end up facing this for some other disease, and we'll have that conversation with our doctor and say, look, you know, you've got months, weeks, whatever it is. And I believe in McCain's case, the diagnosis came about a year ago. And he'd gone in for an unrelated medical condition, and the tumor was discovered, tested, and then diagnosis came that it was this type of cancer that would be aggressive. And in this last year, of course, McCain has, I don't know how to exactly characterize it. But it seems at least that the long goodbye has been anything but magnanimous. I think one of the hardest things in this last stage here, I remember a couple weeks ago, you saw that he specifically didn't want Sarah Palin at his funeral. Now, Sarah Palin was his running mate, right? I mean, one of the big milestone moments in McCain, in anyone's life who runs for president, if you get a nomination to be your party's nominee for the presidency, it's a big deal. And he lost, of course, to Barack Obama. But the idea, I don't know, maybe they weren't close. I get it. Maybe they weren't close. But I also think that there's a separate issue, which is a little before that, he was giving an interview and said that picking Sarah Palin was just horrible and that she was terrible and that was the worst mistake that he'd made in the campaign. And that was just totally unnecessary and petty. Now, I could have told him back in 2008 that picking Sarah Palin was actually a really dumb idea. And the only reason, friends, look, the only reason he picked Sarah Palin because identity politics compelled him to do so. I got to have a woman. I've got to have a token of some kind of minority. How am I going to do this? Oh, yes, I got that Gallup in Alaska. And then I'm actually somewhat convinced that they didn't do enough research on her and didn't talk to her enough. And then you remember the whole story with the campaign. You remember how they bought her a wardrobe because they wanted to dress her up because she was basically running around wearing moose pelts. It's up there riding snow machines and hunting caribou, right, with her husband, Todd. And, you know, they've got, you know, so they bring her down to the big city, you know, to Phoenix, sprawling metropolis of. They take her to the JCPenney and they doll her up. And next thing you know, the American public is learning about this wardrobe that was paid for with campaign money. Oh, I'm just bringing up some memories. And all of it was mismanaged. And it was, look, it's McCain's campaign. He's the candidate. And they really set her up in some ways for failure. They did. I mean, it wasn't the right choice. And to blame her for it is petty. Now, I think this really hits home for me, McCain's death, because our family is processing the loss of a friend who died over the same weekend of actually the same exact type of cancer. He was a much younger guy. Has two young daughters, a wonderful, adorable girls, a wonderful wife, but leaves behind this young family. And this cancer, he fought it bravely. He fought it for 6 years. 6 years and 3 days. So he's in a very small percentage of people that really lasted a long time. I mean, he's somewhere in the 1-2% range in terms of his longevity. And he fought, and in all of it, right, I watched this guy be so kind and thoughtful and considerate of others, even considerate of people he didn't know. And I respect that. And so as I reflect on this thing with McCain, I don't know. I never liked him as a politician. I'm sure he's a great guy. You know, I know. Look, I have daughters. And I'm sure the love that he has for his children is pure. And I cannot imagine their sorrow and their heartbreak. But I also think that a lot of what was said here was unnecessary. And it reveals something that is bigger than McCain. It's bigger than all of us here. It's actually even bigger than Trump, believe it or not. And that is, if you get a little too obsessed with your enemies, if you get too obsessed with the wrong that was done to you, if you get too wound up and focused on all the things that have gone wrong in your life, it'll eventually come out in a really nasty way and backfire on you. And in fact, the truth is, you'll end up looking worse than the people that you're criticizing. Now, the only reason in all of this McCain is being lauded and given, you know, very complimentary press is because he's a critic of the president. And of course, the mainstream media doesn't like that. Doesn't like him. Doesn't like Trump. So they're giving him points. The same way Michael Cohen right now is a big hero to the mainstream media. But as I mentioned last week on the program, that's going to pass. That's going to pass. Eventually, the thing's going to move on to the next subject and the next boogeyman's going to come along. And the media and all the political elites that have coalesced around Cohen, for example, are going to toss him to the side. They're going to dispose of him. He was a useful idiot that they will eventually discard. And sad to say, one thing when you're facing mortality, when you're facing death, you want to focus on in some ways achieving immortality. And when you're someone as famous and accomplished in many ways as McCain was, you look for finding eternal truths and things that will last beyond the next news cycle. And that, I think, really fascinates me here is that he missed an opportunity. I don't know. He missed an opportunity to be bigger than all of this. There's more to this world, I'm just going to tell you this right now, than Trump. There really is. If you right now listening to me, if you are so obsessed about Trump, good or bad, right? You love him or you hate him. I got to tell you. Where the founding fathers put these 4-year terms in for a reason. You know, we don't want these guys sticking around forever. And when we added term limits, again, for a specific reason, to continue the movement of new, fresh blood. And you remember, I'll tell you this, it's you don't even have to go far to recognize the truth of what I'm saying. The number one news story you would hear in, let's say, 2007 about George Bush would be idiot, moron, can't read, dummy, horrible person, can't wait to get rid of him. And 2 years later, Obama is president, and what's Bush doing? He's in a bathtub painting his knees on a canvas. He's not actually putting paint on his knees, but he's painting him. Bathtub. That's the truth. Started painting. No, he settled quietly, you know, and he's an ex-president and he's a non-news story. And all of that hate, all of that nastiness, all of the negative media coverage and obsessiveness over how terrible Bush was gone. So why in your last days on this planet, why obsess about something as impermanent as the Trump presidency? And the only answer for it is you've got an emotional reaction. The guy's gotten under your skin. And it goes all the way back, obviously, I think at least, to the campaign when Trump made his quip about, well, you know, we kind of like guys, speaking about McCain, who was captured as a POW, maybe I prefer war heroes that didn't get, you know, didn't get caught. I'm paraphrasing. And the world just stopped and everybody was stunned. And this is just beyond the pale. He was being funny. I get it. You know, he was, you know, but it's classic Trump. But we cannot, you really, this life is too short to hold grudges. And if somebody has done something to you that is so terrible and so unforgivable that you can't forgive them, that you carry that hate with you forever? That it's on your lips and your dying breaths? Who's really the worst person? Right? Anyway, these are my heavy thoughts for the day. So we will miss our friend, and my heart just grieves for these little girls that live here in Irvine who've lost their father. And as a father myself of daughters, I just absolutely cannot imagine what they're going through. All right, let's end the segment a little bit early. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Nation. All right. I know many of you will be terribly sad to hear that Omarosa's memoir is tanking. I love that it's called a memoir. I mean, look, memoir. Isn't a memoir written by somebody of a certain age who's accomplished something tremendous? Yeah. Lena Dunham wrote hers at 22. Some very profound thoughts in there. It was essentially a coloring book, as I understand it. Well, Omarosa, yeah, so not doing well. The only time that she actually got some eyeballs on she got some sales out is when Trump sent out that tweet calling her a dog. With the tweet, you remember this tweet? When you give a crazed, crying lowlife a break and give her a job at the White House, I guess it just didn't work out. Good work by General Kelly for quickly firing that dog. Yeah, and of course, you know, this was a racist dog whistle, so-called by the mainstream media. And in that moment, Omarosa sold some books. She ought to be thankful. Send Trump a cut. Anyway, on top of his fight with Omarosa, his fight with CNN, his fight against fake news, Trump is now also taking some heat to Google and Twitter. This is a I don't like any of this. Let me tell you something. I understand that Google shifts their algorithm to favor left-wing content because I'm like these freaking social justice warriors who are shocked to find that In-N-Out is a conservative company. I, unlike them, am not shocked to find out that Google is a left-leaning company. I know this. I never search for news by Googling something. I never like to do that. Whenever you do that, if you do it, you will never hit a conservative news site. It's not going to happen. You're not going to have a Breitbart article pop up on the first, you know, three pages, unless it's something super obscure. No, it's always CNN and MSNBC, the Washington Post, and the like. But here's the deal. Google's a private company. They're a private company. And we can't forget this. As conservatives, I know this is unfair. I get that it's unfair. But as conservatives, we value property rights. And this company has an inherent property right in its algorithm, in what they do, to do business as they see fit. Now, Trump's trying to say that they're a public utility, and now as a public utility, they need government regulation. Yet producer Robbie is shaking his head. No, don't do this. You're no better at that point than Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, they went up to his side of the aisle. They want to regulate everything. Now, let me back up here a little bit and say I don't think Trump is actually serious with this stuff. I just don't. I think that he's... I think he's having fun, you know, just rhetorically here fighting a battle. I also think very strongly that there's a little bit of fear that Trump has that Twitter will take down his account. I really do. And I think that Trump's being a little bit clever here in threatening them a bit. Because, he's poking at them. And it's interesting. I will tell you this. On the offensive scale, Twitter has taken down accounts of people who have been less offensive and less obnoxious than Trump. But it's interesting that they won't take down and haven't taken down the @RealDonaldTrump Twitter account. I think they know they can't do it. And I think that it is interesting that on some level they do fear poking the bear too much. So I that's what it is. Because for Trump, his Twitter is everything. You know, his critics say that his Twitter is his weakest link. I totally disagree. I think that for Trump, his Twitter account is the way he gets news and his ideas and his thoughts, unredacted, unfiltered, without any misrepresentation out there in real time. And he's absolutely changed the game as far as media and the presidency, I think, for the better. Again, we'll see how the history books write this out, but that's my prediction. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this with Friday Funny. Don't go anywhere.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Oh, I can't make this up. Sam Rzhovsky. Sam Nation. Okay, Friday Funny, even though we're on Thursday. Bear with me here. So Trump is at a hospital in Ohio, a children's hospital. He's visiting the kids. And he is taking some time to color with them. Now, this is always funny because there you see the president of the United States. Every president does this, right? They meet with the kids, have some great little photo op, but, you know, cheer them up. And what do you know? They've got certain, you know, coloring books there, or templates, if you will, but some photocopied pieces of paper. One of them is the flag, the Star Spangled Banner, the American flag. Now, it's black and white. Trump begins to color it in, and eagle-eyed observers noted that he colored the flag in wrong. Apparently, he used a blue felt-tip marker on one of the stripes. This is funny for two reasons. One, it's hilarious that Trump, goofed on coloring, right? I mean, it's funny that he's coloring to begin with, right? You imagine Trump coloring with a felt-tip. Anyway, this is not, I don't know. That's funny. But, you know, the funnier thing about this is that this is in the news. In fact, this is reported all the way in Sky News in Great Britain. This is how obsessed people are with the buffoonery or the perceived buffoonery of the president. So I'm telling you, yeah, I love the article. In pictures posted by Mr. Azar on Twitter, Mr. Trump is seen to have erroneously colored one of the stripes using a blue felt-tip pen. Now, the article continues to say, quote, the stripes are white and red, close quote. So a lot of people actually, you wonder what people wrote to this. A lot of people actually defended Trump on this one. Somebody wrote, the president has colored his flag wrong. That is all. And basically somebody said, somebody else goes, you're hilarious if you don't think the president knows what a flag looks like. He's coloring with children. If this was a horse and he colored it pink, would people be upset? He colored a horse and not a real horse color? And my answer to that is yes. Yes, if Trump colored a horse pink, that is all we would hear about on MSNBC for at least 4 hours. All right, Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere. Back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay, one thing that I reflected on after last week's show regarding the Manafort conviction and then also the guilty plea filed by Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, I realized really the amount, the staggering amount of laws that are out there on the books that you and I are perfectly capable, probably have somewhere in the course of our lives, failed to adhere to, that are out there that can potentially be used by an overzealous prosecutor as leverage. Now, I see the thing that we always have to consider when you're looking at the news is think of it in a more proximate way. And what I mean here is, what happened to Manafort, could it happen to you? And this is an interesting thing because actually one person who talks about this and has spoken about this for years is Alan Dershowitz. His point right now is that, look, the biggest crime you can commit in America is being associated with Trump. Because if they want to go after you, if there's a prosecutor that is keen to get you, if they comb through your business records, your tax records, and whatnot, they're going to find things that can hang that they can hang you with. So here's what Alan Dershowitz said on Monday on Fox and Friends.
Look, the biggest crime you can commit in America today is to have been associated with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
If you're associated with Donald Trump, they're going to Manafort you, they're going to Cohen you, yeah. They're going to do all of these things to you, and they're going to look hard, and they're going to search, and they're going to stretch. And, you know, maybe they'll find something, maybe they won't. Is anybody really above all reproach? I've been through this. They usually do it with the mafia. It's the Al Capone approach. If we can't get them on the grounds that we'd really like to get them on, let's go after them on taxes. Let's go after them on business. It's targeting people. And if they can target President Trump, they can target you.
Yeah.
They can target anyone.
Well,
that's the problem.
And this actually goes back to a book that was written some years ago, February 2010. This piece came out. There's a guy, Harvey Silvergate, and he's a guy who's written about criminalization of almost everything, right? That there's the federal code, the register of federal law is so voluminous that even lawyers don't know what all the rules and regulations are out there, and even violations of just a regulation can carry jail time. And one thing that the Silvergate guy wrote, he wrote about Dershowitz, because Dershowitz had written a foreword in his book. So let me just quote this here very briefly. So Harvey Silvergate writes, in his foreword to my book, Alan Dershowitz discusses his time litigating cases in the old Soviet Union. He was always taken by the fact that they could prosecute anybody they wanted because some of the statutes were so vague. This was a technique developed by Beria. Now, Beria was, now here he's described as a sidekick of Stalin, but he ran the secret police. He was the KGB guy. He was Stalin's Putin. And Beria's famous quote is, you know, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. This is, by the way, this is exactly how today in Russia they prosecute these oligarchs, right? Putin decides, I don't want him anymore. I don't like him. He's getting too powerful. Bam. They go through his records, find some tax misfeasance, 25 years in jail. I think that one of the ironies here is that we're fighting this fight against Russia. We want Russia to not interfere with the United States. But in our zealous pursuit of ridding ourselves of Russian interference inside the Trump White House, the Democrats are using freaking Stalinist tactics. And they're not okay when they're done, when this is done by Republicans, and it's not okay when it's being done by Democrats. And I worry about our country, because I sometimes see this happen even on a local level. You get a prosecutor who is looking to make a name for themselves, and they overcharge. And I think one of the most one of the best cases of that is the Duke lacrosse rape case, right? So-called the guy, what was it, Mark Nifong, right? Was his name? Mike Nifong? Yeah, that's it. Well, and he absolutely, there was nothing there. But he was running for re-election. And he needed some wind in his sails. And the way he got it is he decided to take up the case of this poor black girl who had been abused, right? So the story went. By rich, powerful white kids, and this was his way of making hay with the black community there in Durham. Well, it backfired, of course. The guy ended up disbarred, served a month in jail. No, one day in jail only. But still, this stuff does happen in America, and it's happening on a big scale to Trump. And don't get so caught up in hating Trump. You know, it can come back and turn around and bite you too. So, anyway, don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking. As opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Marjowski, okay, here in California, lucky us, we are absolutely bananas, running for governor, the front runner, the anointed likely winner of the gubernatorial race, none other than Gavin Newsom, the much beloved former mayor of San Francisco. What is his latest idea? He wants free health care for illegal immigrants. Yes, you heard that right. Free health care for illegals. Universal health care. And he's extremely proud of this. Now, here's the insanity. This is actually going to get him votes. I have a question for you. If you think that this is a good idea, tell me now. How are we in God's name going to pay for this? We can hardly afford, Medi-Cal. We can hardly afford basic medical coverage for the poor in the state. Our finances are so backwards. I mean, this is absolutely insane. And you know the funniest thing to me is, the funniest thing and the most alarming thing about this is that this is not a state where he necessarily has to pander for Democratic vote. I mean, he's going to win. He's got the name recognition. He's got a pretty face. He's cheated on his wife, so that makes him very popular, I think, with the left. He's going to win. He doesn't even need to go to this extreme. But this is it. So we're going to be stuck with this here in California. It's unbelievable. I think at some point this insanity becomes so extreme, though, that there has to be a day of reckoning, does it not? I mean, at some point, what's the old Margaret Thatcher quote? Socialism works great until you eventually run out of other people's money. I don't know what day. I don't know how many companies have to leave and move to Texas, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, for this state to absolutely hit rock bottom. We're like a drug addict. We're just waiting. Everybody's like, no, can't do rehab for California. Can't do that. We're just going to have to wait for her to hit rock bottom. All right. Thank you so much for letting me do the show here a day early and in the evening. I'll be back next week, usual time, Friday. Have a wonderful and safe Labor Day weekend. Enjoy your barbecues and time with family and friends. And I will look forward to seeing you again next week. Remember the podcast, Sam at SamNation.com, for all the information. You can email me there. SamNation.com, the website, you know where to find that. iTunes, you know the drill. Spread the word. Tell a friend. See you next week.